Welcome back to the Deep Dive. And if you are listening to this right now, well, this is a moment of professional transformation for you.
It really is.
This isn't just a standard onboarding process. You've just come through an incredibly rigorous selection process, and you've been invited to join the absolute dream team at Heritage Waterside and Bahama Bay Club. So first of all, congratulations. You've earned this privilege.
That framing is so important. It's not just a job. And what we have in front of us today are the guiding documents, the Covenant for Heritage Waterside and Bahama Bay Club, and the employee handbook.
Right.
And what they reveal, it's not just a job description. It's really a foundational commitment to excellence, to a holistic way of operating.
So this deep dive is your shortcut. It's your way to internalize the profound expectations, but also to understand the unparalleled opportunities that are waiting for you now that you're part of this high-performing team.
Exactly. Our mission here is to decode the system that's been built to maintain this elite status.
And we have to start at the top, right? With the core mandate from the Chief Operating Officer, Corey Schenck.
Yes. And it's a powerful statement. He says, "We are the best of the best, and we'll be better tomorrow than we are today."
Wow. I mean, when you hear that, you realize you're stepping into an organization that, I mean, it sees standing still as failure. Continuous improvement is just the baseline. It's the minimum standard.
It is. And you have to consider the context here. You were selected over hundreds, literally hundreds of other applicants.
That's incredible.
And that signifies two really important things.
Yeah.
First, that your skills, your character, they've passed the highest level of scrutiny. And second, that this organization is fiercely protective of its culture.
So this deep dive is really about understanding the system that's built to maintain that elite status and how your daily actions, guided by the covenant, are meant to uphold that promise from the very first day.
From day one.
Okay, so let's start with the foundation. What makes Heritage Waterside and Bahama Bay Club so different right from the get-go? We need to look at the unique ownership structure.
It's a critical distinction. It really is. And it underpins everything else we're going to talk about. The source material is very clear. These communities are owned by a physician.
Okay, so not a big faceless corporation.
Exactly. This is not some publicly traded company that's beholden to quarterly earnings calls. Mm-hmm. It's not an anonymous corporate chain that's just focused on maximizing shareholder value.
And that physician owner, his original vision wasn't just to build profitable facilities. It was to create the best possible communities for residents.
Yes.
And to provide only the highest level of service. When you ground an organization in expert medical care and personalized community well-being instead of, you know, corporate profit margins, the whole way of operating has to shift.
It shifts profoundly. I mean, think about it. This ownership structure, it allows for a long-term strategic advantage.
How so?
Well, for instance, they can allocate capital to prioritize the quality of the facility or staff to resident ratios or, you know, long-term improvements over the kind of immediate cost-cutting measures that so often plague the big corporate competitors.
Right. They're not just trying to make the next quarter's numbers look good.
Not at all. The focus is fixed squarely on personalized expert care, on creating a true home environment.
And the person overseeing this dual mission of personalized care and organizational excellence is the COO, Corey Schenck. He manages both Heritage Waterside and Bahama Bay Club. And his role, from what I'm reading in these documents, it seems surprisingly comprehensive. It goes way beyond just, you know, operational logistics.
It does. His mandate is explicitly twofold.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, of course, he ensures policies and procedures are rigorously followed. But, and this is crucial, his number one priority is making sure that every single person is actively contributing to the culture.
So the policies are the framework, but the culture is the living, breathing environment.
That's it, exactly. The policies are the scaffolding, but the culture is what defines the resident experience day in and day out.
Culture is explicitly labeled as priority one. Why is that elevated above, say, operational efficiency or financial metrics? I mean, that's pretty unusual.
It is unusual. But it's because Schenck understands that being the best of the best isn't something you achieve through rules alone.
Okay.
It's achieved through synergy. Rules can enforce compliance, sure. But synergy, that feeling of warmth, of security, of effortless care that's generated by the collective behavior and the intentional positive attitude of every single team member.
So he's the guardian of that environment.
He is. He's making sure that residents feel completely at home, completely taken care of, which is only possible when the team itself is unified and positive.
So if the culture is the engine, then the whole operational structure is designed to filter out anything that could cause, you know, friction or corrosion.
Precisely. It's an elite environment because of the people they hire and the system they mandate that those people follow. And that requires a degree of professional self-management that is, well, highly unusual. Which leads us right into this philosophy of constant performance.
This high-performance culture, it must require a very specific mindset. And Corey Shank uses an analogy that I think sets the standard far beyond what we think of as typical customer service. He brings up the Disney parallel.
He says, and I'm quoting, "It is similar to Disney." And for anyone who isn't familiar with the Disney model, this is the idea that every employee is a cast member.
Right.
It means when you're at work, you're not just performing tasks. You are performing a role that contributes to an immersive, intentional experience for the customer, or in this case, for the resident.
And the direct quote in the handbook clarifies this perfectly. It says, "When you walk in here, you are on stage, in character, smiling, and providing only the highest level of communication and experiences for our residents."
Mm.
That is an all-encompassing mandate for your conduct, your presence, your engagement at all times.
Let's just think about the weight of that word, character. It implies consistency. It means the moment you cross the threshold into the community, the shift is instantaneous.
You leave everything else at the door.
You have to. You must be prepared to deliver joy, care, and stability, regardless of what external stressors or, you know, personal issues you might be managing. You become responsible for the atmosphere.
Which leads directly to this philosophy of internal commitment versus external circumstance. I mean, we all face challenges in our personal lives, and Shank acknowledges that reality. He says he can't control what happens outside the walls of Heritage Waterside or Bahamut Bay Club.
But he draws a very firm, non-negotiable boundary right at the entrance.
Mm.
Inside the communities, the collective commitment takes precedence. Everyone is expected to lead with integrity, love, and compassion for others.
And here's the part that really stands out to me. They must actively and consciously choose happiness while at work.
Yes.
Let's pause there, because that mandate, choose happiness,
yeah,
that is maybe the most defining characteristic of this entire high-performance environment. How does the organization view the sustainability of such a rigorous emotional commitment?
I think this is where we have to shift from seeing it as just a behavioral rule to understanding it as an organizational resilience strategy.
Okay.
It's about emotional labor, yes, but it's framed as a strategic choice. They're not asking you to deny your genuine personal feelings. They're requiring you to maintain a professional boundary and presence while you're performing your role.
So choosing happiness means choosing to show up for your team and for your residents in a way that protects the positive energy of the whole environment.
Exactly. And if the culture truly is priority one, then the consistent choice of positivity by every single employee is the daily action that protects that priority. It's an internal commitment that has an immediate, undeniable impact on the external reality for the residents who call these places home.
It's what transforms competent care into truly compassionate care.
And this intentionality, this commitment, is what justifies the privilege of working here. You're not just clocking in and out. You are signing up to be a high-level performer in a very specific, supportive role that requires you to bring your best self forward consistently every single hour you are on stage.
So that intentional commitment, it's formalized. It's written down in the Covenant for Heritage Waterside and Bahamut Bay Club. And this isn't just a list of rules. It feels more like a foundational promise that defines the behavior and the values you need to operate at this elite level.
It is. It formalizes that commitment to upholding integrity, compassion, and excellence,
mm-hmm,
while constantly reinforcing the fact that this community is the resident's home.
It's a contract.
It's an explicit contract. The organization provides this system of support and growth, and in return, you commit to delivering on these 9 core values.
All right, let's break them down. I want to analyze how they work together to create that synergy you mentioned, the synergy that delivers world-class service.
Okay, so commitment number 1, integrity and morals. This is the bedrock. It has to be. In a high-trust environment like senior care, every single action, every decision must be guided by absolute honesty and ethical conduct.
So that means treating resident possessions, their funds, their time with the utmost respect.
The utmost. It's foundational because without that integrity, the entire system of trust just collapses.
Okay, what's next?
Commitment number 2, love and compassion. This is the humanity that gets injected into the performance model. It ensures that your competence is delivered with approachability, with warmth, with genuine kindness.
And not just toward residents, but toward teammates as well.
Crucially, toward teammates.
Mm.
That relational warmth is essential. It's the difference between just executing a task and actually delivering personalized, heartfelt service.
Right. And that leads into commitment number three, respect for teammates and residents. This feels like it's focused on how everyone depends on each other.
It is. The organization recognizes that the high standard of service can only be maintained by a strong, supportive internal team. So honoring one another's efforts, respecting the roles and responsibilities of your peers, that's what facilitates the best possible environment.
Okay. Commitment number four, understanding our purpose. This acts as a sort of constant compass.
A perfect way to put it. The residents' comfort and well-being are paramount. They are not clients in a facility. This is their home.
Right.
And the entire team exists to support and uplift them every single day. This refocuses everything away from, you know, internal administrative tasks and back toward the human experience.
Now, this next one feels critical to operations. Commitment number five, protecting our culture. This is where the rubber meets the road on that Choose Happiness mandate, isn't it?
It really is. It's a shared responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And the guidelines are exceptionally clear. Any toxicity, any of it, must be reported immediately to the executive director.
And it specifies the reporting must be verbal.
Yes, verbal.
That immediacy, that verbal requirement, it highlights the urgency. Why is something like gossip or negativity or speaking poorly about teammates or company policies considered so destructive that you have to report it on the spot?
Because those behaviors are like acid. They're highly corrosive to synergy, they introduce internal friction, and they just drain the collective positive energy that's required to maintain that on-stage character.
So you, as a member of this team, are expected to not tolerate anything that undermines the community's core mission.
Exactly. And leaders and managers, they're tasked with actively guiding employees to maintain this culture. So just passively observing negativity is, in itself, a failure to uphold the covenant.
Okay. Commitment number six, commitment to improvement. This one directly references a system called the 1-3-1 rule, which we're going to detail a little bit later.
Yes, and it's important because it signals that while negativity is banned, constructive critical thinking is not just allowed, it's mandatory.
I like that distinction. Then we have commitment number seven, welcoming atmosphere. This is the tangible daily execution of being on stage.
For sure. Every single employee, it doesn't matter what your position is, maintenance, dining, care staff, you are expected to greet and welcome anyone you don't recognize.
And it gives a specific phrase, welcome to Bahama Bay Club.
It does. And that guarantees a consistent, positive first impression for every resident and every guest every single time.
Commitment number eight, teamwork and support. This moves beyond just respect into actual action.
Right. We look out for one another. This means creating a seamless experience for the residents by proactively offering help whenever and wherever it's needed. The phrase, that's not my job, it simply does not exist in the vocabulary of a team that's committed to this level of excellence.
And finally, commitment number nine, going above and beyond. This feels like the summary of the whole thing. It's the operational standard for being the best of the best.
It is. It's the commitment to consistently exceeding expectations to ensure the highest possible level of care and joy for the residents. It's what turns simple compliance into true, heartfelt dedication.
So by signing the covenant, you, the listener, you're accepting that these nine values aren't just optional suggestions. They're the fundamental structure that defines your entire professional presence.
It's a commitment to live up to the standard of love, respect, and excellence that makes this organization elite.
We've established the really rigorous demands of this culture, but this is balanced by what seems like an extraordinary commitment from the leadership. This organization doesn't just demand high performance, it seems to invest in the whole individual.
It absolutely does.
Mm-hmm.
This is what Corey Shank calls the family philosophy. And it's a commitment that I think transcends the typical employer-employee relationship.
There's a quote from him that is just remarkable. He says, "When someone joins our family, they become a part of our family, and part of my job is to help them strive to reach their dreams, even if it isn't at our communities."
I mean, that's a sophisticated retention and engagement strategy disguised as just pure generosity.
Right.
When you analyze that statement, it reveals a long-term, holistic investment. The organization sees its people not as, you know, interchangeable cogs in a machine, but as valuable, growing assets.
So by genuinely supporting personal ambition, even if that means the employee eventually moves on, they're ensuring maximum dedication and performance while that employee is on the team.
Exactly. It fosters incredible loyalty.
So how does this translate into actionable support for you, the listener? The documents say the organization provides training, but it goes far beyond the required industry stuff.
It does. They provide specific training focused on happiness and growth.
Happiness and growth. What does that even mean in a corporate training context?
Well, think about the depth required for that. It means courses focused on things like internal resilience, communication skills, emotional intelligence, maybe even financial literacy or leadership development.
So skills that are universally applicable, skills for life.
Exactly. The goal is clear: to push you to be the best you can be, both at work and in your life. It demonstrates a deep belief that a growing, fulfilled person naturally elevates the performance of the entire dream team.
This holistic investment, it's a substantial privilege. And it really validates the rigor of that selection process.
Mm-hmm.
So to protect this investment and this elite culture, the operational requirements for getting in and staying on the team have to be stringent.
Oh, absolutely. The organization has to ensure every team member adheres to the absolute highest ethical and legal standards.
Yeah.
So first up, legal work status and background checks.
Non-negotiable, I assume.
Completely. The requirement for the legal right to work and passing a comprehensive screening. We're talking prior employment verification, reference checks, criminal checks. It's an absolute must.
The source material is very clear that individuals convicted of disqualifying offenses are not eligible to work. And this isn't just a formality, right? Why is this screening so critical to the culture of excellence?
Because the service they provide is built entirely on a foundation of trust. We're talking about residents who are often in a vulnerable state. The rigor that's applied to these background checks, it reinforces the ethical bedrock of the whole organization.
It protects the team, it protects the residents.
Protects the integrity of the team, it ensures the psychological safety of the residents, and ultimately it protects the privilege of employment for those who have proven they can meet that high ethical bar.
And that professionalism extends to credentials. Licenses and credentials must be current and valid at all times.
And there's zero tolerance. If a license expires or is revoked, the consequence is immediate suspension or termination. There's no grace period.
Then there's the initial validation period, the introductory period, the first 90 days.
Right. And while it's framed as a mutual adjustment period, let's be clear, it's primarily the supervisor's final opportunity to ensure that you, the new team member, can meet and, critically, exceed the high standards laid out in the covenant.
It's the final proving ground.
It is.
And failure to consistently meet or exceed those standards could result in release. So this reinforces that selective nature of the team. The invitation to join is just the starting line. It's not the finish line.
That's a great way to put it. You have to consistently validate that you belong among the best of the best by adhering to these standards from the very first day.
Okay, let's go back to commitment number 6, the commitment to improvement. This is the key structural mechanism designed to channel critical thinking constructively, instead of letting, you know, corrosive complaining take root.
This is the 1-3-1 rule. And it is the systematic positive antidote to toxicity. It's brilliant, really.
How so?
It ensures that any energy you spend identifying a problem must be matched by even greater energy spent developing a solution. You can't just walk in and say something is wrong.
You can't just point out a fault. You have to become a co-creator of the fix.
Exactly. It's a remarkable piece of administrative genius because it completely shifts the psychological framework. It moves an employee from the passive role of a victim or a complainer to the active role of a consultant or a leader.
So break it down for us. What are the specific required steps for using the 1-3-1 rule?
Okay, it's simple and it's powerful. First, the one. You have to define the problem clearly. You must articulate exactly what the issue is, factually, without any emotional language or hyperbole, just the fact.
Step one, identify the problem.
Second, the three. You must provide 3 options or ideas to fix that problem. This forces critical, creative, and wide-ranging thinking. It prevents the instant dismissal of a proposal because the team now has multiple alternatives to consider.
So you're not just bringing a problem, you're bringing possibilities.
You're bringing possibilities. And finally, the last one, you provide your final recommendation. You have to take ownership and endorse the path that you believe is the best way forward.
This whole process, it allows the organization to genuinely live up to that promise of being better tomorrow than we are today. It taps into the frontline experience of every team member, but in a highly structured, productive way.
And it protects the culture by making complaining completely inefficient and making problem solving mandatory.
Which is protected by what Corey Schenck calls the golden rule. This is the absolute requirement for 100% compliance when it comes to behavior and communication.
This is the zero tolerance policy against toxicity. Schenck has, and I quote, zero tolerance for anyone who talks badly about other people or who badmouths the systems and policies.
That's a bright line.
It is. This mandate is the operational safeguard of that whole choose happiness philosophy. It means the organization recognizes that, look, not all dissatisfaction is malicious, but the manner in which it's communicated can be toxic and destructive to morale.
So there has to be a proper channel.
Therefore, the source material defines a single, approved, and confidential channel for communication if a team member is genuinely dissatisfied or has a serious systemic complaint.
And that channel is exclusive. It says here, the executive director's office is the only designated place a team member can complain about anything.
The only place. And this centralization of complaints serves several purposes. It ensures issues are logged, they're taken seriously, and they're addressed by the appropriate authority.
And it protects the rest of the team from being exposed to that corrosive negativity.
Precisely. Violating this rule, so complaining elsewhere, engaging in gossip, negativity outside of that approved private channel, is explicitly classified as toxic behavior.
And the consequence for violating this golden rule confirms just how vital it is to the culture. The source clearly states that violation results in the team member no longer being a part of the business.
This is a stark, absolute commitment. The organization is willing to lose personnel to maintain the sanctity of its culture.
There's no gray area.
None. They operate with kindness and with structured ways to improve. Any deviation from that system is defined as toxic and is simply not tolerated. This confirms, once again, the exclusivity and the privilege of being part of this dream team. It requires consistent adherence to kindness and structured problem solving.
Okay, so we've covered the internal structure, the mindset, the commitment. Let's look at how that external image of excellence is reinforced through these rigorous professionalism and appearance standards. The presentation is the physical representation of being on stage.
Yes, and the personal appearance standards are meticulous. They are designed to project competence, cleanliness, and care. And there are subtle but important differences in the uniform requirements based on your specific role.
Let's start with the dining staff. The mandate is black pants and a button-up long-sleeve shirt or blouse. And this small detail that's often missed in other places. If the pants have loops, a black belt must be worn.
That strict standard, it conveys a sense of formality and respect for the dining experience. Now, you can contrast that with other community employees, non-managers, who wear khaki pants and a solid black short-sleeved collared shirt.
And they also require a belt if the pants have loops.
They do. And these variations, they subtly signal the differentiation between roles while still maintaining this overall umbrella of professionalism and cleanliness.
And of course, safety standards are paramount. All uniform staff need black non-skid shoes with a closed heel and toe.
And that's not just an aesthetic choice, it's an operational necessity. It's about preventing workplace injuries, which protects both the team member and, by extension, the residents.
Right. And beyond the uniform itself, there are clear restrictions that reinforce that professional boundary. The ban on inappropriate clothing is absolute. No denim, no leggings.
Everything must project high professionalism.
Mm-hmm.
And the appearance standards are just as detailed. Jewelry has to be used in moderation, with specific bans on excessive amounts or dangling earrings.
Which, again, that's often a safety or hygiene hazard in a care environment.
It is. And for direct care staff, this attention to detail is even more critical for things like infection control and safety. So nails must be kept at sports length.
Sports length?
It ensures that care can be delivered without posing a risk of, you know, scratching a resident or transmitting pathogens. It confirms that even minor grooming choices are actually operational decisions in this elite setting.
And what about visible body modifications? They're addressed directly to make sure that onstage image remains universally welcoming and professional.
Yes. Tattoos and piercings are governed by a specific protocol. Extreme tattoos must be covered when you're having contact with residents or the public.
Okay.
Furthermore, body piercings, specifically nose, tongue, or eyebrow, are strictly prohibited while on duty. And male employees may not wear earrings at any time.
And these standards, they exist to make sure that the onstage image is consistently professional, respectful, and focused entirely on the resident, free of any potential distractions.
That's right.
Okay, next, let's analyze the interaction playbook. The customer service guidelines in section 4.3. This really outlines the high-touch resident experience that makes the organization stand out.
And these are not suggestions. These are standards for compassionate, intentional interaction.
Let's run through them. First is break the ice.
This requires being proactive. You make eye contact, you smile, you introduce yourself, you call people by their name. If someone looks confused, you stop and offer assistance. It's that constant conscious effort to engage positively.
Next, explain what you are doing. This feels like a key psychological insight.
It is. Explaining procedures reduces resident anxiety because people are always less anxious when they know what's happening and what to expect next. It's a courtesy that builds trust.
So important. Okay, respond promptly. The document captures this with a really powerful phrase. When people are worried or sick, every minute is an hour.
Just think about that. A prompt response is a direct demonstration of profound compassion and urgency, which is central to the entire service commitment.
Absolutely. Then there's dignity.
This is the ethical foundation of every interaction. You treat every resident as though they were your own parent or your own relative. Your words, your tone should never insult or demean. They should only show concern and compassion.
And finally, help or find. I like this one. If you don't know the answer, it doesn't mean you can't help.
Exactly. You find someone who can. Customer service, in the form of finding a solution, is always your job, regardless of your title.
These guidelines really do ensure every interaction is intentional, compassionate, and professional. It's about maintaining the dignity and the trust of the residents.
And that professional standard is fiercely guarded by strict rules on confidentiality and professional boundaries. We have to stress the requirement for absolute resident confidentiality under IMPAPA.
So no discussing information in hallways or common areas?
Never. Information is only shared on a need-to-know basis. In a high-trust environment like this, a breach of confidentiality is a fundamental failure of the covenant and can be grounds for immediate termination.
And finally, the strict rules on professional boundaries, sections 4.27 and 4.26, these are critical for protecting the team's ethical standards and the resident's vulnerability.
They are absolute non-negotiables. They're designed to eliminate any potential conflict of interest. So, for example, employees may not take current or former residents to their homes or off the community property without explicit approval. The only exception is for sanctioned, documented outings.
And even more critical is the rule about financial transactions. Employees are strictly prohibited from entering into any financial or transactional arrangements with residents or their families.
This includes accepting gratuities, money, or gifts of any kind.
And the handbook is explicit. Violating this will lead to termination.
It has to. It's crucial because it protects the professional relationship. Accepting gifts or money, it can blur boundaries, it can compromise an employee's impartial judgment, and it can open the door to exploitation. Upholding this rule ensures the ethical integrity of the entire organization.
And there's also a firm rule against personal relationships, isn't there?
There is. No employee should have an amorous relationship with any resident, their responsible party, or their family members. If a relationship like that existed before admission, it has to be reported to the executive director immediately.
And developing one after admission and not reporting it?
That results in severe disciplinary action, up to and including termination. The ethical line here is absolutely rigid because professional trust simply cannot coexist with personal entanglement.
This has been an extensive deep dive, and it confirms that Heritage Waterside and Bahama Bay Club is a highly selective and committed environment. It demands the very best from you.
But in return, it offers true personal and professional advancement, extensive opportunities for growth, and the immense pride of being part of a unified elite culture. This isn't just a job. It's an invitation to elevate your career and your personal life.
The documentation makes it so clear. You have been selected to be part of an organization that believes in holistic excellence, an excellence defined by kindness, by structure, and by continuous improvement.
And the true test of being on this dream team isn't just signing the covenant. It's consistently living out the 1-3-1 process. It's maintaining that on-stage mentality and strictly adhering to the kindness mandate every single day.
The consistent adherence to these defined systems is what maintains the culture of being the best of the best.
And this commitment, it requires profound personal discipline. As you move forward in this privileged role, here's the challenge that really defines what it means to uphold the covenant.
Okay, let's hear it.
Since culture is priority one, and every interaction is on stage, how does your commitment to constantly choose happiness internally, even when you're facing external adversity, translate directly and sustainably into the high-level, compassionate experiences you deliver to residents day in and day out?
That intentional choice is the core of your professional contract. The standard has been set, and now it's time for you to deliver on the promise of excellence that earned you this place on the dream team.